Okay, gentlemen, the Great One has been spotted. Budget cuts this year, so we're having to do Plan B. She's on Salisbury Plain, so it should be quite easy. The helicopter should be coming over now with the massive glass. Now, you chaps, you need to get the big piece of cardboard in place.
Right.
That's it. She's going to run towards you, so remember to hold it steady. Helicopter, bring it down, lower it, hold it into place, gentlemen.
Here she comes.
She's on the move. Lower, down, now.
Slide under.
Yes. Hang about, leg. Push the leg. Push the
leg.
We've got her. Oh, boy. Right, what do we do next?
Out the window.
Okay.
Bring forth the giant Hoover. Scream.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Asterman.
I'm Jay.
And I am
on holiday, so feeling very full of himself.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Stop.
All right, release the great one.
All hail 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 the great one.
Anyway, without further ado, giant glasses and cards for trapping spiders besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo!
Doctor Who news.
Oh, yeah.
Doctor Who Radio Times anniversary specials reprinting.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Those with long memories might remember two Radio Times Doctor Who specials, one released in 1973 for the 10th anniversary and the other in 1983 for the 20th. They are both getting reprints by Big Finish, this time as hardback books, for the princely sum of £25 each or £45 for both.
Wow,
I'm really glad we've still got our 1973 and 1983.
I'm not sure whether the 83.
Yes,
one we've
still got it, and we've got the 73.
I'm not sure where the 73.
Yes, I know where it is because I got it in an what are those things called where you bid money for stuff?
Auction
at a convention.
I know my original copy sort of fell apart because it was thumbed so much.
Well, now you can have it as well.
One good thing is at least it's not the Dalek in Manhattan Radio Times.
Oh, yeah. Now you can have them both in annual form.
Exactly. Hey! Yeah. My original 20th anniversary fell apart. Took it to school with me all the time.
Oh.
I did get a reprint at Longleat a couple of years later after that. So this isn't the first reprint.
Oh.
And I gather the original 73 one was 30p.
Something
yes.
like that.
Oh, okay.
It's now £25.
It's gone up a bit.
Inflation.
I never had either of them, unfortunately.
Yes.
Oh, further Doctor Who news.
Ooh, really? Do tell.
Yes, the 10th Doctor and Rani team up.
Not the Rani.
The Audiomongers at Big Finished have announced another set of 10th Doctor audio adventures, and this time he's teaming up with Angie Mohindra's Rani. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Mohindra's Rani Chandra, as originally seen in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yep.
The first three out of 12 upcoming new stories for Doctor Who : The 10th Doctor Adventures will feature this duo, with another 9 currently unclear. The first of these individual releases is due in August 2027 and then appear every 2 months, CD and download for £14 each and download for £10.
That's not too bad.
Okay.
So 12 of them every 2 months starting from August next year. It's going to be well into 2029, isn't it?
Yeah.
How long did they have the license for?
At least 2031. I think maybe longer than that now. Is it 2035?
This is a good commitment because previously the 10th Doctor's only had 3 stories per box set, but this time...
Well, yeah, it's same format, basically, but instead of being a box set of 3, it's now individual. So this 3 Rani set would have been a box set.
Yeah.
Then there's 3 individuals. Then there'd be three more.
It would have been three box sets of three stories.
Okay.
Well, four box sets.
Right, four box sets. Yeah. Anyway. Hayden Panettiere.
Dead.
Yeah. Dead, and I'm sad. But I've never heard of her, unfortunately.
No, you've never seen, well, Heroes.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Right.
We are doomed. Actress Hayden Panettiere has died at the age of only 36.
Wow, that's young.
Best known to many for playing the effectively immortal cheerleader character of Claire Bennett in the 2006 to 2010 series Heroes. Panettiere's parents got her involved in acting at the age of 11 months in an advert and appearing in 50 adverts by the time she was 5.
Wow.
She then, in 1994, did a 3-year stint in a soap opera, One Life to Live, before switching to another soap opera, Guiding Light, for another 4 years or so. Mm. By about 9 years old, she was receiving award nominations for her roles as Princess Dot in the Pixar film A Bug's Life.
Oh, okay, I've heard of
that. Did not realise that one.
Her extensive list of roles for TV also include Law and Order, SVU, Ally McBeal, Malcolm in the Middle, Robot Chicken, Amanda Knox, Murder on Trial in Italy, Nashville's, and Heroes Reborn. Film roles including Remember the Titans, Ice Princess, Scooby-Doo and the Goblin King, Scream 4, Scream 6, and Sleepwalker. The cause of Panettiere's death has not been determined, though there were no signs of foul play or suspicious circumstances.
This one was a bit of a shock, because she's just a kid.
Unfortunately, she does tend to have been one of these actresses who had a sort of very troubled time with things like opiates and pills and other stuff like that.
Matthew Perry-esque.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because she lost her younger brother about 7 or 8 years ago.
Also, she had a postpartum depression after she lost her own child back in 2015.
Blimey. But she's got another daughter, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think her then husband took custody of.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Gilbert is trying to make a little team up of all these former child actors, particularly actresses, because a lot of them it doesn't end well for.
No.
It's
the pressure of
Legendary being a child star.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, if you haven't got your parents, haven't got your feet firmly on the ground and haven't got your needs at heart, then
I mean, it does sound like the parents, I mean, if they were pushing her in commercials from a very early age, I mean, it doesn't really sound like they did have her best interest in heart.
You get so many stories of them being seen as milkshake tickets rather than your child.
Yeah, and what makes it even poignant is I'm currently working my way through Heroes at the moment.
I have an addendum.
Addendum?
Michael Wright, who played Elias in V, has died at the age of 70.
Mm-hmm.
His wife Susan confirmed that he passed away in Los Angeles of heart failure with complications from a degenerative neurological disease that I cannot pronounce. He was really good at as Elias. He was a hood rat.
He was.
Who came good.
He did, very much did, yes. Any more addendums?
I have addendums. I have
plural.
Multiple addendums.
Of course you do.
I have one or two as well, so we'll
start with you,
husband.
My first addendum.
Addendum.
Is while many former Doctor Who writers such as Russell T and Stephen Moffat have been speaking optimistically about the show's future, Mr. Gatiss has thrown his hat into the ring that is not quite so optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
He is of the opinion and of the feeling that it's going to take quite some time before anyone picks up the tender for Doctor Who, and we may be looking at another hiatus of at least a couple of years.
It's a couple of years just to do pick it up now.
You know, we'll have the information that it's up and running and people are filming, but he's saying that we'll have a couple of years before even that.
He's saying it needs to be missed, wasn't he?
Yeah.
See his point, but I don't know, if the money is there, that's the problem.
Yeah.
If the BBC can afford to make it, they will make it. I don't know if they can afford to make it. It depends on who they can partner with to fund it.
I don't think it's a bad idea to give it another big break.
Yeah.
You know, then it will come back when we're all dribbly and in our bath chairs.
Or dead.
Or dead, yes.
Wasn't that big a gap last time? It was only because the McGann thing didn't work. It was only, 6 years before the McGann movie. And the BBC wanted that to work. It wasn't their fault it didn't work. So if it's only 6 years, then it's...
I think it'll be more than 6 years. I think we've come to another, the next generation will pick it up. I'll bet you a shiny pound, Crumbly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you accept this bet?
I'm done.
Excellent.
But then, yeah.
But that's my shiny pound.
The next generation nearly ready to take it already. Yeah. I think if they were 10 years old in 2005...
No, the ones that are watching it now, the little babies now. Give it another 20 years.
So, yeah, we still have this sort of bluey kids version of it to come out, don't we, to fill the gap.
Yeah.
Before it came back in 2005, it was all about Big Finish anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That would be an interesting mix to see, like an actual bluey Doctor Who.
Yeah, and the question is, I mean, well, you've got all these rumours abounding about JMS wanting to be the showrunner. I mean,
that would be cool.
It would.
Would be very cool. Jay, your addendum.
Okay, so this one's a more sort of Star Trek-y, comic-y type thing. Ooh. We may not have Legacy, but we do have some new Star Trek comics that are coming up, which are going to feature the Enterprise G and Captain 7 of 9. Oh. So those are going to get released. So the first one is going to be released around about September 23rd. It will, of course, feature Captain 7 of 9 and... Raffi will not be first officer. She's gone off and done her own thing, but still going to be a little bit in contact. Yeah, sort of interesting how this one comes out. It's going to be
IDW?
Written. It's IDW, because they've got the license for that. And it's going to be written by Christopher Cantwell, who has done a lot of the recent Star Trek comics.
Yeah.
The question is, will she be Captain 7 of 9 or Captain Annika Hansen?
7 of 9.
Yeah. Captain 7.
I think that was more or less established by the end of Picard.
Yeah. Come on then. Let's have another addendum.
My addendum's back to Who. Billy Piper has been tapped and what's going on. And she says she's an actor. She doesn't know what the hell's going on.
And that was my second addendum.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry to have...
I figured they would probably overlap.
Yeah. Sorry to have nicked your second addendum. So, I am not the next Doctor. I am Mose Tyler in hiatus, she explained.
Well, I do have somewhat of another addendum. And then that's Arthur Darvill and Karen Gillan.
Have started a
podcast, and they've got an Instagram where they've been dropping information about this, but not actually any released of this particular podcast yet, but they promise it's coming soon.
Yep.
They've been talking about it for months.
Yes. Yeah.
And I keep every now and then look on my podcast feed thing to search. Yeah. There's a lot of podcasts out there. None of them are theirs.
Yeah. It now seems to be getting a little bit more traction, though.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah. I have one last addendum. As you remember, last year we reviewed Alien Earth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This year even.
Was it there? No,
was it this year?
Could have been this year. Could have been a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Either way, a couple of months ago. I think we have all agreed that the standout creature was... the Oedipus.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The little eyeball octopus. Yes. There's a couple of moments in the show where it took over a sheep.
Yes.
You can now own that sheep.
Oh, boy. Hopefully not in gooey form.
No, they have bought
out... Is it in knitted form?
In chop form.
Yeah. Kid Robot has bought out a piece of merchandise that is actually a plushie. You can get a plushie sheep with a detachable eyeball.
See, it sounded cute up to that moment, yeah.
You can pull out one of its eyes and it's a lot of a bendy, foldable, fixable... octopus with a massive eyeball on it.
Oh, it's the way you say them, nice. Keith. Yeah.
I know Funko Pop released a version of
they
that.
They did, didn't they? I do look out for it, no pun intended, but I've never seen it.
And that's the end of the news. With that news out of the way, I would like to take you all to the final episode of... Gene Watch.
Oh, no!
The final episode? Oh, that sounds...
ominous.
Ominous.
Afraid.
Now, I have spent the last 3 weeks looking after Jean after she came out of hospital.
Poppy her brow.
So naturally, I've killed her. No, I haven't. Yeah. This is all with Jean's permission. She went to see the surgeon to get all the results of her tests and that after the operation. And she couldn't be normal. She couldn't have a run-of-the-mill cancer. No, she had a rather rare cancer, which was destroying her appendix and had sallied forth onto the bowel to see if there was valid ground to take up there. If she hadn't gone to the doctor because of this annoying pain, she would have found out that she had this cancer after her appendix burst and might have killed her anyway. So we're very, very glad she went to the doctor. It was called a grade 2 high-grade appendiceal mucinous neoplasm, and a word with about 97 syllables that I'm not going to attempt to try. They're going to examine it further to see if she needs 6 month or yearly checkups for the next 5 years. But on the positive side, she's so cool. She's annoying as hell because she wants to do things that her body's not yet ready to do. But she's on the mend. All is going to be good.
Good. Excellent. Excellent news.
And I think I deserve a medal for having been with her for 2.5 weeks.
Remind me
to... Love you, Jean.
Remind me to work that into the conversation.
No, we were cool. We blitzed Sandy Toksvig's latest archaeological thing. We blitzed the Marlowe Murder Club. And now, I've been to Marlowe in Bucks, and believe me, there's never that much murder there. But, you know, Joe Martin shows up and suddenly there's murder.
Yeah.
And the cats are missing you, I understand.
And the cats, yes, her cats are lovely. Aww. But we will look forward... She's signed off work until October, so anybody who knows her, be prepared to have things sewn for you. And that's the end of Jean Watch. Right, what should we do?
Let's go home.
Okay.
Let's do something spider-related.
Spider-related? Okay, we all went to the cinema.
We did.
Grand day out.
Oh, it was good. And we saw Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man.
Pause for
does
music.
Whatever a spider can. Can he swing stop now. From stop away? Now.
Keith, stop you're not now. Music. We keep telling you this.
Was it Spider-Man A New Day?
Brand new day.
Yeah. Okay, hands up who loved this.
That's all of us for
audio,
those who
can't, they can't see the hands.
Well, Crumbly, have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's all right, he didn't put his hand up, so I assumed he hated it. Adam, talk us through it.
Well, this is fourth of Tom Holland Spider-Men.
Yep.
Spider-Mans.
Yep. Gone, it's now gone further than any other Spider-Man has before.
Yes.
It's now the seventh film that he's been in.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they did the, that you do a flashback, they look like babies.
They do, yeah. He looks a little bit older this time, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. They're starting to show their age, but then it has been a good few years since the last one.
Well, remember they got blipped.
Married. It's called Married.
No, they were blipped away for 5 years.
Yeah, they were. Okay. Yeah. But, of course, after the last film, everybody has forgotten Spider-Man. Who Peter Parker is. Yes. They all know Spider-Man is still out there. In fact, the city seems to love Spider-Man.
Yep. Yep.
But they don't know about Peter Parker. Even his close friends, they've forgotten him entirely. Yeah.
The first thing that made me wonder what's going on here is that, I mean, this is, of course, in the MCU, the big shared universe that Marvel's doing, of which Daredevil is part of now, the new Daredevil.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the first season, and Mayor Fisk, who was Kingpin, he was going on a very anti-vigilante thing. So I'm not quite sure how the second season of Daredevil has kind of squared this away with Spider-Man still being around. So I'm not quite sure how that all fits in together if we're still going to have this shared MCU.
But anyway.
Yeah, yes. But yeah, poor Peter is struggling on his own, living in the
basement.
Dingy apartment. Yeah. I think it's actually in the loft space.
He takes over the loft.
Yeah, fighting crime and doing apparently nothing else. Don't know how he makes money. Maybe he's getting money from the Stark Foundation or something. I don't know.
Or he steals it.
Well, how would he? Because no one knows who he is anymore.
Yeah.
But he's still
Spider-Man
an Avenger,
could show
he?
Up. And,
yeah. Well, yeah. Spider-Man's still an Avenger, even if people don't know who Peter Parker is.
I doubt he has a bank account in the name of Spider-Man, though.
I don't know. It's always a big question
of
how they make their
money. We'll just kind of hand-wavy that thing aside.
Yeah.
Yes.
He basically has no alter ego now. Peter Parker is the shell of a man.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a job, doesn't have any life.
And his main contact is Chief of Police.
Yep. Who has a direct phone to him.
Yeah.
Very much looks like the handheld thing in the games.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder which came first. Did they concept art the film and then do the games? I don't know.
Well, the game's been out quite a few years.
True, yeah.
But Peter appears to be overworking quite a lot and doing nothing else, doesn't he?
And he's starting to get ill. Something weird is happening with him. Mm. His arachnid DNA is taking over.
Yes. He's mutating.
Although this really seems to come to a head after he bumps into Ned, who turns up in one of the stores he's
the
in
bakers.
After. Yeah, so he's off there getting flowers for his aunt's grave.
Again, where does he get the money for that? Or is he just stealing from the shop?
Yeah, but he happens upon Ned and follows him and finds out that Ned and MJ are cohabiting together in an apartment.
For uni?
They've just finished MIT.
Yeah, because that was the plan at the end of the third film, wasn't it?
This is the trigger, it seems, that is of now kickstarting whatever is going on with him.
And meanwhile, we've got some unknown person who appears to be able to possess people's minds and jump between people, and they're trying to get into damage control, which is a particularly Sony sort of thing, isn't it?
No, damage control has appeared in the comics.
Yeah.
They originated in the comics.
I don't think it's ever appeared in any non-Sony film.
It has been in the Marvel films, but this is somewhat of a weird relationship, of course, because, Spider-Man is Sony, but this is also very much in the MCU, so it's very much with Marvel's cooperation.
They have taken centre stage in the Spider-Man films, the Sony films, but they have been, or at least mentioned, in other films. And as a damage control does originate in the comics.
And the head of damage control wants Spider-Man to protect damage control from whatever the...
This threat seems to be always going towards a damage control facility.
There's a particular
vault
there.
Of course, it's a lovely, nice facility.
Oh, yes.
The guy in charge, there's nothing questionable about him at all.
Even his teeth are sparkling.
Spoiler music, spoiler music, la-la-la-la.
He's not at all dodgy in Severance either.
Yeah. He's found his niche.
He apparently has, yeah.
Now, I love the mercenary who's Peter's buddy.
The Punisher.
Oh, yes, he's very manly, isn't he?
Frank.
Again, that's a making this of cross from the TV universe of that was in Netflix.
Well, I've got no problem with that because Matt Murdock showed up in the last film. Daredevil.
I've got no problem as well. I mean, I love the fact that they are actually bringing these people across into the MCU proper.
I like Frank because he's a tough guy.
Damaged.
He's a badass, but he's annoyingly for himself, he's got a heart of gold.
But he is damaged.
He
goes for the easiest solution, which 9 times out of 10
involves a gun.
Involves a gun. Yeah,
a big gun. Now, one thing we noticed, MJ, she's still wearing the necklace.
The Black Dahlia.
Even though she doesn't know who Peter is.
She appears to be dating someone else now, doesn't she?
She seems to have moved on.
Although you mentioned the necklace, at one point where we get in later into the film, when she's sort of saying she doesn't really know Peter at all, she is actually holding the necklace.
She was holding it the whole time, wasn't she?
Yes. So there is something there.
Just
the same thing. And we are also going right the way to the end here as well. I'm sorry, jumping about. But yeah, that handshake with Ned at the end.
Well, we were talking about this on the way home, that you've got the love of his life and his best mate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the best mate that seems to recover the memory quicker than the love of his life.
As I say, I think that...
Has he fully recovered yet? I mean, this could just be some strange muscle memory.
Yeah, I think that's down to muscle memory, because that is completely different.
Well, then why wasn't MJ shagging him?
Because they haven't shagged.
Or kissing him.
But yeah, I think where Ned's concerned, that was muscle memory.
When they did the special handshake.
The special handshake, yeah.
Now, so we've got this person who can jump from body to body. Well, body to body, consciousness to consciousness.
My first thought is that Sylvie from Loki?
Yeah.
She used to take people over like in that same way.
Yeah.
And also, you only saw it briefly as a shadow. The
outline.
Cow-type thing over red. And typical Sylvie.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's not. Mm. Who is it, Adam? No. You've spoken. Scott, is it?
The funny thing was, it took about half an hour. I was going, who is that? I recognise that face, because you see us sitting in the back of the car, and I'm going, I should know this. It's so simple. And of course, it was Max from Stranger Things,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Clues in the VMAX.
Yeah, the only clue she's got is VMAX. Yeah, it was really clever, wasn't it? And, she's going around possessing people, including, at one point, threatening MJ.
Yes.
Yeah. So Spider-Man...
Even possessing MJ.
Yeah, possessing MJ. Spider-Man takes MJ to Frank to keep safe.
Okay.
And then webs up the Max's helicopter. What's her name? Her character's name?
Jean Grey.
Jean Grey webs up Jean Grey's helicopter so that she can't jump her 33 feet.
It's a weird sort of distance, isn't it? Although she does improve.
She does improve, yeah. Not her choice, but she does get better. And then, we have a really heartbreaking scene where she finally possesses MJ and does the whole, oh, I remember you, Peter, and they have a little kiss. And I fell for it. And then at the back of my mind, just before everything changed, I was like, oh, hang on a minute.
Damn it, they got me.
Yeah, it was her all along, and she throws MJ off the building.
That was one of the surprising things is that we find eventually that she's been possessing MJ for longer than we thought that she had.
Yeah. She played her.
But throwing her off the building, never going to be a positive thing in his eyes.
No, absolutely not, no.
We've got to wonder how she got out of a helicopter. Did she literally jump out of a helicopter to get near the...
Did a bit of running.
Okay, so that was kind of explained a bit at the end when we see the things with her sister. So they are going from them to someone who's within 33 feet. Then can jump to the next one one, and then at the end it can just snap back.
Yeah. But what
so
happens?
So it wasn't a case of jumping to someone to escape it. It was just it snapping back.
Maybe.
Or she jumped into the mind of a bird.
Yeah, jumped out of the helicopter and before she splatted, she got close enough to somebody.
Yeah.
But her body was unsplatted.
Yeah.
We don't know how the body she was in.
I think I also would like to do a little call out here to the Scorpion.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's
in the previous film.
Yeah, it was the same actor who was in the first Spider-Man film.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
They've maintained a link. Yeah.
And Spider-Man snaps and literally whoops his ass almost to death and injures
a police officer.
He
embraces the dark side.
He does indeed. Yeah, his eyes turn.
He always keep doing that black thing. Yeah. That was horrible.
And it hears it's
becoming arachnified.
Yeah, he's overwhelmed by all the sensory input, isn't he?
Yeah, that was interesting. I feel quite sorry for spiders if that's what it's like for them.
But it did get quite comical where he started producing his own web and he nearly threw up in his own
mouth.
And just like shooting. Now we know the first Spider-Man felt.
That was a very nice thing that he said. I mean, he actually referred to the other Spider-Man as Peter 2.
Yeah.
And he said, it's fine, Peter 2 can do it. It's like, do it.
But when he saved MJ and he's swinging through the city, you could hear him going, web on, web off,
yes,
web off, web off.
And it's just, he's all over the place webbing at that point because it's all new to him and he can't control it and he's flailing about the place. Very funny.
I always find, in all of them, I find the montage when he's learning to use his powers amusing.
Yeah.
It's pretty inept. Yeah, it's very good.
Eventually, of course, Grey tries to break into damage control again. Mm. And it's very cleverly done. She's sitting down in the office and you can hear thwacking. And it took me ages to work it out what was going on downstairs, so to speak. And it turns out it's Hulk.
Yeah,
Hulk.
She's
now possessing Hulk. Yeah. And that, it was already bad enough when the Hulk was there, but now she's possessing him.
Because Peter approached Banner to ask him about... yeah, how to control mutations, how to, yeah. And Banner knew there was, didn't recognise him, obviously, but knew there was something wrong.
So, am I correct? Well, of course, Banner didn't recognise him.
No.
Hulk did.
But the Hulk did.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I correct in saying the Hulk was played by Mark Ruffalo?
Oh, yes.
Yes, indeed. There's a big pitch battle where Spider-Man takes care of the Hulk because Frank doesn't want to deal with him.
Wise man, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah. What does Frank do? Shoots him, which is going to make him angry, and then therefore stronger.
He was Brainy Hulk when he first turned into the Hulk, I think.
Yes.
And then he went to full Hulk by the end.
But eventually, Grey gets into the vault, doesn't she?
She does. And she does indeed.
In there was the guy she was in charge of damage control. That's all she was really after. Not anything.
Because
not
he was an arse.
He was an arse. But at the last moment, she is overwhelmed and captured.
Because Spidey puts the limiter on her.
Limiter chip. He's got a couple of these going around. Yeah. What's
now,
one for the...
This limiter chip gives me thoughts as to what is eventually going to come down in the MCU for the X-Men.
Is there any reason you're holding the back of your neck? Is it?
No, I'm just touching
relax.
My neck. But in the X-Men, they very often are made to wear these collars, which dampen their powers.
Which we have seen in Deadpool.
Yes.
Okay. But Deadpool is not the same universe.
I know Deadpool's not. So well, it is sort of dovetailed into it now. But
the question is Peter Parker's technology that he developed there going to be used in the collars to end up suppressing the powers of mutants?
Possibly.
He's got a lot of tech, actually, Peter. That did throw me. Is that something to do with Iron Man's influence?
It's left over from... Because he had the iron suit. Right. Whether he's cannibalised that for his other tech is another matter.
I really felt that this is a movie that really did the shared universe thing right. Because you had these little bit parts, the new Black Widow.
In her office.
Yes, in her office.
Pugh.
Yes. So just it was just a little bit there. I mean, she wasn't the focus of the film. No. It was just this is just someone he knows as Spider-Man, and he's just asking for help. I mean, just like he's going to ask Banner for help. He doesn't really know Banner at that point.
At least when he meets up with Black Widow, skin is baby soft afterwards. I love the way when he stripped off but kept the mask on.
And then his feet bobbing up in the water.
Yeah. The mask stays on in the bath.
Yeah. I'd agree with that, the other universe stuff. It wasn't overwhelming, so I've missed a couple of films. I could still enjoy this without getting confused.
It can be very easy to sort of do a shared universe thing where the other people end up becoming sort of somewhat a larger focus than they should be.
Yeah.
But here, it wasn't that case at all. They were used exactly how much they needed to be used.
Also, I think this film had a lot of heavy lifting to do with its various plot threads that were pulling together. And it achieved it. To my mind, it was successful. There was no plots left hanging, no threads just cut off. It all homogenized into one glorious whole. Thank you. Thank you.
Does make the previous film a bit redundant, though?
Which previous film?
One where everybody's mind is wiped.
Yeah. Well, everyone's mind still is wiped.
Well, a lot of people at the end of the film know who he is.
I don't think so. There's only the surgeons, and they have to. There's a process of confidentiality.
Banner probably figured out.
Although the surgeons,
the surgeons
just know that he's Spider-Man. They don't know the guy's name behind it because they don't know who Peter Parker is.
I
have to disagree. Banner did not know. Hulk did, and Hulk always has.
No. He made the connection between Spider-Man and the guy who was at the university, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, but who's that?
Yeah,
who's that?
And also, he gave a fake name.
A name that could easily lead back to
you're talking at most 10 people who know he is in a city of 30 million.
Where it was 30 million people in a city of 30 million.
True.
And you can trust Banner, and you can trust surgeons.
And Max, not Max, Gray is saved from going completely evil by Aunt May, of all people, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Having a hug.
Yeah. See, Aunt May kicking bottom even when she's dead.
Much, but she was in it just enough to save the day.
What I liked about Aunt May is Keith's reaction. When she was in the last film, before she died. He was quite annoyed that they were using an Aunt May. She's meant to be 60. How on earth can we possibly take this Aunt May serious? She's meant to be 60. Oh my God, the actress is too young. I'm going to look her up. Damn, she's 60.
She was 60 on the grave too when she died.
Yeah. Because she was born, the character and the actor was born in 64.
Same year as Keith.
Died in
Marissa Tomei.
24.
My niece and nephew went to see this film the day after we saw it.
Oh yeah.
What after did they think?
They loved it. They particularly me and Addy were talking about the bit where Peter thinks MJ's remembered him and like how heartbreaking it was.
It was so sad.
Yeah, we both were. But Logan decided his favourite part, and I won't say why Peter Parker went to hospital, but there was a comical moment where Frank's wearing the Spider-Man mask doing a cheesy wave out the window and the crowd are just roaring, and he loved that bit.
And Peter's in the cloud.
Yeah, and that's where the kid looks at Peter and does the Spider-Man thing.
Yeah, no, I have to ask, was that the kid or was that Jean Grey?
But
the best thing about this entire film was that when it finished and everyone was leaving the cinema, the little boy who'd been sitting behind us and was getting very excited, he was dressed as Spider-Man. He was all of six, wasn't he?
And I enjoyed this so much that I went back and watched the third film because I realised I hadn't seen that one and I thought that sounds a bit fun, and it kind of led into that, so I watched that as well. So there we are.
See, and something else I want to just highlight here is that the montage where we had of Spider-Man fighting the various villains.
Oh, yeah.
Those were lifted from actual comic covers.
Oh, really?
They're all comic covers.
All comic covers,
The first one...
Almost pretty much down to the details.
Yeah.
Like the one where he was fighting Tarantula, who was this guy with the metal... feet. He was, I mean, I've got the cover here.
Clawing
he
the
was,
silo.
Yeah, he was clawing. Yeah, it was on a boat. Yeah. It was on a boat. But you actually had sort of a couple of police people firing at him, and it was the same angle of the people in the scene. It was well done. I mean, there was attention to detail in this.
The first one that you saw with him swinging along with the guy in his arms.
Yeah.
That is the first ever Spider-Man cover.
Wow.
That was from The Amazing Comic.
Yeah.
Mm. Not The Amazing Spider-Man, The Amazing Comic.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I do like to do a few shout-outs as well. You mentioned the Insomnia game, the Spider-Man Insomnia game.
Oh, yeah.
In that game, he has a contact, a female contact on the police force that phones him up and he phones her.
Yeah.
The electrical pulse guns that they're using and the stun rods that they were using in Damage Control, those are lifted from the game. And also...
The Spidey Tracker.
Ned's Spidey Tracker is the information download page of the game.
Nicely done.
Okay, so do we recommend people go and watch this?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yep.
Right. I forgot what I was going to say.
If you've seen this...
That's the thing. Yeah. Right, if you've already seen it and would like to share with us what you thought of it, you can do so by writing to show...
Staggering.
Stories.
Net.
Thank you for your input, Crumbly. Right, after exposing ourselves to the big screen, we decided to go back to all things Audible with Big Finish and Doctor Who. Pause for music. This is a McGann story with Sheridan Smith as Lucy Bleeden Miller.
Yep.
It's the Eightfold Truth and the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Released in 2009, but set in 2015.
Yes. Dun, dun, dun. Scott, do you want to tell us about this one?
Yes, I've got a nice succinct bit here.
Excellent.
Okay.
It worries me when you look down at your groin and smile.
That's it. The Doctor's looking for a lost space probe, and Lucy Miller is feeling plain lost on a world she no longer quite belongs to. Perhaps there's someone who can help. A chance encounter with an old sparring partner leads Lucy to the Eightfold Truth.
Dun, dun, dun.
A bunch of crystal-bearing cranks who reckon a rebel sun is on its way to purge the Earth. As if.
What nonsense.
There we go. That was better than I could have done.
Not the Rebel Moon, fortunately.
No. That's a completely different story.
That's it. And the leader of the Eightfold Truth is played by, is it Stephen Moore?
Stephen Moore. Yeah. Marvin.
Marvin.
The original, yeah. You might say.
Blimey.
And we have the reappearance of Karen.
Yep.
Not that Karen.
No.
The other Karen.
The other Karen. The annoying Karen. And
who said it wasn't me?
No. And, of course, the reoccurring villain, the Headhunter.
Headhunter.
I forgot she was coming back.
This, I don't know any of these characters. So
well, no. I don't know who the Headhunter is.
This pulls from ongoing plot threads that has run through the Lucy Miller Doctor, Eighth Doctor stories. Because
right.
We've also got the Stellar Manipulator.
Oh, yes.
That
yes.
In this one was built by Omega, which was the cliffhanger for the last season.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yes. So, oh, yes, because it's putting together. Morbius turn up, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes. So I wonder if it's meant to be the one we saw in Remembrance of the Daleks, or it's just different one?
It's a different one, because it was built by, as you said, not Omega, Morbius, because Morbius returned in the previous story. His cliffhanger season finale.
But she's basically sort of a recurring female master.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, she gave that sort of
travels
class. Yeah, she's a masterpiece of work.
She's been on an ongoing bad guy from the very beginning of this.
And she's kind of suave but kind of funny with it as well, like the master. And completely forgetting to mention, of course, that that's not the big villain at all, is
no.
it?
No.
It's All Hail the Great One
all
and the Eight
Legs. All Hail the Great One.
We get... They don't call them or say they're spiders, but you get subtle hints.
Like the mind-controlling crystal.
Or not so subtle hints throughout the whole of the story. Especially when they start to speak slightly like that.
And, in fact, the spiders are quite offended if you call them spiders.
Oh, yes. Yeah, which is in keeping with the original.
Yes.
My only annoyance here was that Lucy fell hook, line and sinker for going along for 5 minutes to speak to the Eightfold Truth. I mean, it might as well have had trap in neon letters with a big arrow pointing to the door.
No disrespect to Lucy, but she is a doctor's companion.
This is very true. I know it's in the contract. Yes, she has to do it.
Now, I think the Eightfold Truth was a not so subtle dig at Scientology.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, where they go around canvassing, oh, have you got 5 minutes? Yeah. I'd like to ask you some questions about your life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they pull people in.
And the holding of the crystals.
It's like the e-meter.
They talk people down. Something brilliant's happened.
Is it though?
Keith, your wife's had a baby. Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. You're never going to have any time to yourself or any money again, are you?
Yeah.
And just acknowledging a good thing, but then making it sound... Yeah.
Damning you with faint praise.
Yes. Yeah. But Lucy becomes the chosen one, so...
Oh, yeah. She comes out on top.
I love the Dr. Side mission where he's working with Dr. Sankara.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And they're looking for this lost space probe.
Was that Sanjeev Bastille?
Yes. It was, yeah. Yes. Because when these McGann adventures started, they got lots of famous voices in, didn't they? Yeah. Anita Dobson for the first Dalek story. Yeah.
Talking of the Rani.
Yes, before we got the Rani. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this one. I thought the spiders, if anything, were a bit underused, weren't they? It was like they turned up right at the end.
Yeah, they didn't sort of leap out until the last half hour, of the second disc.
Which I suppose works better on audio, doesn't it? Because you don't get to see them creeping around.
Yeah. One thing I didn't quite get, when the people who had the crystals died and went to Eight Legs Heaven, and it was basically a projection of themselves. Mm-hmm. Were they dead? Because
I think the journalist
Kelly, she was really good, and then she got run over deliberately.
So she was really dead.
Yeah, I think it was like a version of what Missy was using.
It
was sort of like a mini Matrix.
But Lucy wasn't.
No, Lucy.
Because Lucy's body was still alive.
In fact, the Doctor called it basically the Matrix, because he said there's a version of that on his planet. Yeah.
So they're still there. They're, the data.
Weren't they in the manipulator, the stellar manipulator?
Yeah, I mean, that's why he said that we're going to just tow it away somewhere and hide it.
Mm. Yeah.
So these people can continue to live out their afterlives.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So they're probably immortal now, stuck in that, which is nice.
Slowly going mad.
Downloaded into artificial bodies, whatever happened to River. I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, been saved.
So is it metabolis or...?
Well, they seem to have a little gag, which I wasn't quite sure of the timing. It felt like they were making a bit of a gag about Matt Smith's mispronunciation.
Metabolis.
Metabolis. Yeah. But actually, it's before.
Yeah.
So,
Didn't they call them the metabolis, Chris?
They did. Yes.
They did. They
somebody else
which
missed.
Is what they should...
I still love the idea that number three had a speech impediment.
So he just got it wrong.
So it was actually, he was trying to say metabolus, but it came out as metabilis.
It's kind of a nice season ender, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
After the heaviness of the previous Morpheus one.
Yeah, it's certainly, it also cranks up the tension over the two-parter. Mm.
I loved the scenes where Lucy is fighting back against the Great One to get her mind and her body back, and she's just annoying the hell out of them.
She's doing what Lucy does best.
She is.
My only regret is they didn't sort of do a rerun of the scene where the TARDIS is on Metabilis 3 and you've got all the stagehands throwing everything they can get their hands on at the TARDIS. And the giant flying feet.
Oh, yes, the flying feet. Yes, we never found out what that was.
It's just feet.
Furry feet, taloned feet. Of course, this is a two-parter. So we've got the Eightfold Truth, and then the next one is called
The World Wide Web.
The World Wide Web, where everything begins to come to a head, and the spiders start materialising, and everyone.
There's something on your back.
Aye.
This was during the annoying times where you'd have a two-part story, but they'd release each part separately, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You'd have to wait for the next part. Wouldn't have a complete story.
Month apart,
I think. You say that. I mean, this was 2009, so was that around the same time that Donna had something on her back?
But they
probably written before them.
That was 2008.
They don't actually say.
They don't actually mention that phrase.
No.
Yeah, so this was recorded 2008, and Donna's final season was 2008, wasn't it?
2009. Yeah.
2009
was specials.
Was specials.
I'm only just mentioning it because Karen said that.
Blame me.
Yeah. Oh, I will.
Thank you.
Yuck yous.
I miss Jean.
I can talk in a Cockney accent and accuse
you. Can't.
I can talk.
We've been doing role playing for the last God knows how many months, and you were meant to be doing a Yorkshire accent. And my God, no, you were trying to do an American accent.
You will not diss my southern accent.
American chums, it wandered from New York via Ohio, nipped down to Texas, and then settled in the heart of Louisiana. And we were meant to not laugh, and he gets all picky because we laugh at him.
Trouble is, you didn't laugh at that, did you?
No, it was
no, you didn't. What did you laugh at, Karen?
The cum lab.
Sleeping quarters, cum lab.
You said it was a sleeping quarters and cum lab.
Yeah. We got stuck on that joke for
quite a
while. We really did. We had galoshes out so we could wade and everything. We're 12.
This is what I have to deal with. Anyway.
Yes. But yeah, is this the death of the headhunter? Is this her last
appearance? I think it is. Yeah, I think this is the last her last appearance. Because we've only got one more season after this.
The last season.
She did seem to die in this,
Yeah, I think it was, yes. The
but as she's a baddie, this means nothing.
No.
Nothing at all.
It looks like this was her final one.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed, although I understand I don't think they had the licence yet, that they didn't mention Sarah Jane.
They did have the licence. They may have lost it.
I was disappointed that she didn't get a mention.
Yeah, they could at least have mentioned her, even without a licence.
That was my only disappointment.
Sarah Jane Adventures was going at this point.
Yeah.
So they probably couldn't say too much about her as a character, because she was running around at that time period-ish, 2015.
Yeah.
Probably dead, unfortunately, at that point, but... I don't know.
Okay.
I think what's nice about these old Paul McGann adventures, not that they're old, but obviously they've been out quite a while, is that they kind of went for, a kind of modern Who take on them, didn't they? Yes. Both with the episode length and the subjects and how they approach their stories. So I think it's probably worth going back and listening to them all from the start, really.
Because at this point in time, they didn't have access to 10, 11 or 12.
No.
So and they only went as far as...
They deliberately brought the Eighth Doctor Charlie back from the Divergent universe so they could do this and ditch Charlie along the way. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Charlie was awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly more these, the Divergent universe, these ones. It's when they stopped No. 8 with the general weekly release and gave him his own release where they moved over to a sort of
because these were broadcast, weren't they? Was it Radio 4? They were broadcast first, then released on CD.
Oh.
I'm not sure if they were broadcast first, but they were certainly broadcast.
Radio 4 Extra or 7, whatever it was called
Radio,
at the time.
Radio 7,
I remember it being advertised they were broadcasting.
Yeah, they were definitely broadcast. I'm not sure if they were broadcast first before they released.
Oh, well. Okay, so do we recommend people listen to this one?
Yeah, just for Sheridan Smith, it's worth it.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she's for some reason, she's Miller. Still following me on Twitter.
She's a bit evil in this one, too.
She does, she gets to exercise her ice queen muscles. Mm.
Yeah.
And the return of a very old villain, yes.
Yes.
Okay, listen to it. It's awesome. Then write to us and tell us how awesome it is via show.
At staggering
stories. Dot.
Nerd.
Do we have any feedback?
He didn't like you talking, saying he had a speech impediment.
he's giving you the evil eye there. He's hiding under his hat.
Yeah. Well, I can see one beady eye staring out at me.
We didn't even mention his death because of the hand of the spiders.
One, two, three.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
Spider lover.
Hello, Terence. Hello, Dave Zick and the Mighty.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Wacko, Yakko and Doctor.
Folded up and leant against the bookcase. Case Clara.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
The goats.
A Moomin.
Moomin.
Sandy.
There's a white cat stuffed in that corner.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, the creepy cat.
I think we have to, after today, also acknowledge the Sylvies.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, after mentioning her this earlier.
Yeah, she did get a name check earlier.
She did get a name check, so we have to mention the Sylvies.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I see now. In amongst the other paraphernalia.
Yeah.
This island of misfit toys.
Have you thought of sort of having pulled down shelves coming from the ceiling?
I'd have to then have the room above to make space, wouldn't I?
Well, that's okay.
Okay, what about shelves coming from the floor?
Okay, that might work, dig down.
Well, that actually would go into the secret basement then, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the nuclear fallout shelter.
I thought it was deeper than that, the fallout shelter.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
Any road up.
Do we have any feedback?
We do have a bit of audio feedback.
Who is it from?
From Reese.
Yay!
Hey.
Hello, Reese.
Hello,
Staggerers, and hello, Head of Pertwee, and the ensemble of inanimate objects and characters and paintings and whatnot that join you while you record the podcast. Speaking of recording, I'm back to my old habits of recording this on the day that you're recording. But this time I feel like I've got a better excuse than just, oh yes, I'll do feedback for them. Oh God, today's the day to do feedback for them. I actually was reminded by your episode that Star Trek Strange New World started. I knew it was coming this month, but I forgot what date. And then they did a triple episode, first returning release sort of thing.
Well,
and
you're
so
welcome.
I had three episodes to watch. And then by the time I'm recording this now, the last few days, we've gone up to five episodes. So I've watched all of them. I won't do spoilers for the most recent ones. I don't know if you're going to keep reviewing the season as you go, but we'll see.
Yep.
But I've got a few things to mention about it. But also, just jumping back to a bit of a conversation that my last feedback seemed to spark with you guys was about Marvel and its CGI. And Adam made a good point that Marvel is sort of always rewriting the films in the middle of production still.
Yeah.
They don't finish a script and then film with a finished script. But the reason why is that worked so well with Iron Man 1, where most of that is improvised. I feel like they had a bare basic plot that they knew they would use Ironmonger and they cast Jeff Bridges as that specific villain. But a lot of the scenes as you go were improvised by Robert Downey Jr. because he's very good at that, especially in character as Tony Stark. So they had a very big success with that. And then that's one of the things they just love about Tony as the character, either solo or in ensemble films. And then they made $1 billion with the first Avengers, or Marvel's Avengers Assemble, as it's known over there.
is.
So they just kept doing that formula. However, it does remind me of a little behind-the-scenes story or a thing that Tom Holland mentioned in an interview.
Oh, yeah.
But his experience of working on The Odyssey with Christopher Nolan, who is meticulous. He meticulously plans the scripts and then the execution of it. But also apparently he plans the day's shooting very clearly. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I get the feeling that for Tom Holland, that was refreshing compared to Marvel. Yeah. And so when he was asked to come back, he said, look, if I do come back, can we do that? Can we know exactly what we're shooting on the day?
Can we be more professional? Follow
the script, and we'll have a beefier script than we normally do on the day, less improv. That's sort of an implication I got from an interview from Tom Holland, is that he kind of just wanted a clear goal to achieve in that day, and then you go and do it.
Yeah.
And that pays off for, you know, you're going to be filming him swinging through New York, even though a lot of it was filmed in Glasgow. But, you know, the CGI artists, if they've got a blue screen behind them, you know they're filling it in with New York landscapes. So that's easier for them to do photorealistically. And I prefer that in terms of the looks. So if that's how you achieve that better, then that's good. All right, that's enough about that. That was just a little bit of tidbit, a bit of trivia that I heard recently. Mm. Time to move on to Strange New Worlds Season 4.
Oh, yeah.
I won't go too much into detail, but I will just say I loved the descriptions that were given last time. Oh, that reminded me. I'm glad to hear that things are going well with Gene. Well, Dead. Things are going well and things are moving.
Yes.
I'm also a bit disturbed to hear that things are moving, but never mind. I'm glad things seem to be on the right track.
Yeah.
With Gene's recovery. So that's very good to hear. All the best to you, my friend. I loved yours and Fake Keith's descriptions of the episodes. I will just say the first episode felt a little bit like how a lot of people describe some of the historical episodes from Doctor Who, where the Doctor was sort of just observing. And in the end, it feels like the Star Trek crew were just observing, but it was done with a lot of style. Dinosaurs. It was just fun in that regard. Plus, the leader of the aliens, the Martians, I don't know if you remember Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, the cheesiest season that put a lot of people off. But when The Winter Soldier came out, that completely changed that show, and that show is really good. Anyway, in the first season, there was a character called Victoria Hand, played by the same actress who played the leader of the Martians in this episode. I've forgotten her name, but I looked her up because she was familiar, but she had an American accent in that, and she was British in this. Anyway, it was really cool. Well, she wasn't British. She was speaking with a British accent. She was Martian.
Acting.
Anyway, whatever. The stories and storytelling and television production, and it's funny how if it's an American show, to make them a bit odd, they speak British. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. Moving on. One of the things I love about this show, and speaking of Doctor Who as well, is that it does like an anthology thing, and I think Keith mentioned this, but it's got different tones and genres every episode. And I love that. You can do that. You can get away with that. We've had musicals. We've had crossovers with the animated episodes. We had, and with Doctor Who, we had 73 Yards and Space Babies in the same season.
Yeah.
And you target slightly different audiences. You target slightly different genres and tones. And I really like that about both the Gutwa seasons and this. Although, to be honest, a lot of Doctor Who has done that, but I think it was...
That was one of the successes
of the Gutwa seasons for me, was that they really went out of their way to do that. Whereas,
yeah.
you know, you've had Blink and you've had Smith and Jones in the same season and you had Silence in the Library and The Unicorn and the Wasp. You had a range in other seasons, but I think it was even more obvious, maybe because there were fewer episodes in the Gutwa seasons compared to those seasons I just named, 3 and 4. But I really liked that about both shows. And one more thing I like about Strange New Worlds in general, but it came up again in the Everyone's Stoned episode. It's the ongoing joke about Spock and other Vulcans. And I think Keith mentioned this as well. It might have been Jay, but I agree with it, with whichever one it was that mentioned. It might have been Scott. Now I'm forgetting. But I agree with whoever it was that mentioned. They like how Spock remains deadpan.
Yeah.
But he's apologizing for either being really angry and out of character with T'Pring in a previous season or he's being stoned in this one. But we don't notice a difference in his behavior. And then he describes how he's seen them as trees, and we see it from their angle.
His immaculate
From his angle of them being trees. I really like that ongoing joke and the way it was done here, but it's just it's a good touch. I really like this show. It's one of my favorite Star Treks. I haven't seen all of Star Trek. I've seen a lot of the original series in Next Gen. Most of, barring the final season of Discovery. I will get around to it, but the last season I saw was where I stopped watching. I've got this thing ongoing with Adam and Sandro where they weren't as big a fan of Discovery from the beginning as I was. I really was, but they kind of just abandoned ship at some point.
Pretty quickly.
And then I lasted much longer until the last season I saw, and it felt like it was jumping some sharks. Still enjoyable, still really well acted, but the writing was tedious. I want to finish it.
Discovery peaked season two.
Yeah. Anyway, that's another story. I've been going on for a while. I'll send this off to you now. Hopefully you see it. Otherwise, you'll have two bits of feedback next time. But, all the best to Gene and all the best to the rest of you. And I'll speak to you next time. See ya.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. I said thank you, Jay. You'll have to edit me out on that.
You're welcome.
Lead us out crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
Thank God.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
L for Lucy. Lively, lovely, lumbering, lascivious, lecherous, long-legged...
Lustful. Linda.
Luxurious.
Called Linda. And Lucy.
Comes lumbering...
Lazily. Towards us.
Laboriously. Until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
The presence of those seeking the truth is infinitely preferable to the presence of those who think they've found it.
That's very deep.
Thank you, Jay.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, Number 505, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Asterman, Jay, and the real Keith Dunn. Views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended. And this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
You two are back in the room. This is going to last very long.
1, 2, 3...
Oh, wow,
that is a record.
That was barely even 2 seconds.
When you weren't here, we went on for at least
we nearly passed out.
Passed out.
Died.
Yeah, exactly.
All right then, sensible face. 3, 2, 1.
I'm really sorry, my nostrils did a clicky thing.
Did a clicky thing?
They did a clicky thing, like they were just relaxing. Yeah.
That's probably good enough.
They got some rhythm up there.
You had your eyes closed,
I
didn't
you? Ah. As I told you, it's because you two get into a competition on who can pull the silliest face.
Well, I'm always going to win because, you know, I can't physically see him properly. But I was trying to get my tongue as high up my nose as I could. And I realised he must have his eyes shut.
Until I opened them and then it was all over.
All right, so would you be able to do a helicopter sound effect?
I'm sure the helicopter on the BBC sound effects, yeah.
We need that man from Police Academy.
Mm. Oh, the one who could do the yeah.
Was it Winslow?
I think so.
Jones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jones, yes. Yeah.
It's Benton flying the helicopter. That's usually his job, isn't it?
The giant rolled-up newspaper.
October 2025. We last reviewed Alien Earth.
It was last year.
Okay. It seems like this year.
They all blow into one eventually.
It does, yeah.
Okay. I'll do that again because I had hold of my microphone.